Okay. Good morning. Can everybody hear me? Good. Well, I can hear myself. That's a good start. Please, no heckling. It's been a tough week. Good morning and welcome to Systems Center Opalis meets dot, dot, dot. Now, I kind of looked at the slot when I saw the schedule, and I thought to myself, okay, hold on a second. There's that Thursday night thing, and we've all done it. We've all ended up upside down behind the speaker. And then we get home somehow, and the next morning we get up somehow. We have that cup of coffee, and we make it in. We get through that first session, and then at about 10 a.m. we start to lose our will to live, right? And we all start coming apart. And that's my session now, that you're all start coming apart in. The other bit that I looked at was the fact that I'm doing System Center Opalis. They did Orchestrator about 3 days ago. So I'm kind of saying, let me show you the past, right? I kind of feel they should have swapped those two around so that I could have shown you Opalis, and then they would have gone, and guess what? We've built this on top of it. But no, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to basically now rip the house down and show you the foundations. There we go. Just to make sure you're in the right place, System Center Opalis. My name is Glenn Morris. I'm a trainer, solutions architect in a number of spaces across some Microsoft technologies, mostly the System Center suite, SharePoint, and CRM. I tend to, within the System Center suite, play in the Config Manager, Ops Manager, and Opalis space. Okay, with SharePoint and CRM, that's just an extension because you have to eat. And that tends to be where a lot of the work is currently. What I wanted to do today was not necessarily show off Opalis in a manner that you guys would all go, wow, this is great and all that kind of stuff. But what I wanted to do was essentially plant some seeds. Okay, this is a product that Microsoft acquired a couple of years ago now, and it's slowly been turned or matured into a Microsoft product, and you'll see that with the next version, which is currently in beta, which is Orchestrator. But I wanted to show you a little bit about what has been acquired, how it works, and essentially plant some seeds so that you can take this technology and move forward with it. I wanted to go through a little bit of the architecture, show you some of the palette and the workflows and what Opalis does, and then extend that even further by showing you what happens if it doesn't do what you need it to do. In other words, how can you take it to the next step? So our agenda today looks a little bit like this. System Center Opalis itself, initially. So we're going to look at what it is, where does it come from, what we call the integration packs, which comes to the core of Opalis, because that's essentially what we use to make Opalis do its stuff. And then if that doesn't offer you enough, how do we move to the next step and take Opalis and turn it into a technology that will provide a solution for you? Before I go any further, who here is using Opalis? Epi. Okay. All right, so we've got one in the room. Who has seen Opalis? Okay, as in seen a demo, that kind of thing. Who has heard of Opalis? See, I tell you, there's a few people who just came to sleep, whose hands never went up. So that's the interesting one, and that's what I noticed in the Orchestrator session the other night. This session was actually going to be a little different. But then I saw the Orchestrator session, and it blew my mind that when they asked who'd seen Opalis, about three people put up their hands, and I was kind of like, okay, wait a second. This is going to be difficult. You can't start in the middle. We better sort of take it back a little bit and just kind of slowly move through it so that it makes more sense. Okay, so that's what we'll do over the course of today. Firstly, we'll look at what it is and where it comes from. Like I said, it's a technology that was acquired a couple of years ago. Opalis was an originating brand name, and Microsoft acquired it and then called it Microsoft System Center Opalis. And it's slowly being matured into a System Center product. There've been a number of issues in that it was not a .NET product, for instance, initially. It was written in Java and a couple of other things. And so we're starting to see .NET skins across the top, and we're slowly starting to see it being changed or turned into essentially a .NET-based product. Okay, so what does it do? All right, IT process automation. And this is one of the things that that is also funny about running the orchestrator session first, because a lot of these conventions, a lot of the names that I'm going to be using have changed, going off to the next version. What used to be called a workflow is now called a runbook, and so on and so forth. Anyway, IT process automation, known as runbook automation, which is the ability to orchestrate and integrate IT management tools through policy. So what we're trying to do is put in place some sort of policy that goes through a series of steps that would be a process within your technology stack that you currently do manually. That might be, I don't know, monitoring a file, and when the file gets to a certain stage, having to go in and archive certain folders or anything like that. Now, that's a very simplified example, but what we'd like to do is essentially have that file monitored automatically. When we need those files archived, we'd like to have that happen automatically, and we'd like to report to somebody, and we'd need that to happen automatically too. Okay, these are all manual processes that we don't want to do going forward. So essentially, by putting these policies in place, we start to reduce costs. Okay, if we can automate things, then the costs come down. Obviously, it simplifies things too, and our resources start doing things other than monitoring files, checking on logs, things like that, because we know that this particular automation is doing all of that for us. Okay. Now, some of the bullet points that you guys can see there, we've got multi-vendor integration, no rip, replace, no vendor lock-in. So a palace is essentially pointed at working with anything and everything. Currently, it's targeted at certain technologies, and there's a community out there that is building more and more what we call integration packs in order to allow a palace to work with other technologies. But the idea is that whatever it is you're using, whatever set of third-party tools you might be using, Opalis should be able to get those third-party tools to connect to each other, connect to the Microsoft stack, and help you to automate your environment. Okay. We've got some pre-built activities and workflow processes to speed our time to value. That's essentially built around the fact that there's certain processes that everybody tends to do. As this product matures, Microsoft is starting to find out that there are certain pains within every enterprise that are essentially similar. So why don't we pre-build those environments for you? And you can just obviously get a little creative once you're in there and say, you know, we don't necessarily need to go through that stage, but we do need to go through the stage 4. Replaces, obviously, in your manual, your resource-intensive and error-prone activities. These are the things like watching the files, logging things, checking Ops Manager, creating collections, making sure the collection does what it wants, kicking off tasks, kicking off sequences, checking on drives, pinging computers, all the usual things that you go through your day as technology admins doing. Okay, we've got intelligent workflows based with rule-based branching, automation that spans multiple IT components, disciplines, and silos. Then we've got the customers starting to use OIS. Okay. Now, that's another little issue that we have here, because in terms of naming convention, a Palace Integration Server is what it's called in this version, and it moves to Orchestrator, System Center Orchestrator, in the next version. So these are the little things we start to look after in terms of from a customer point of view. Incident management. Okay. So when we have incidents that pop up in Ops Manager, Opalis monitors Ops Manager and then moves through some sort of alert and remediation process. Okay. We can integrate across the monitoring tools, the service desks, the configuration management databases. So it doesn't matter what you currently use as a monitoring tool, we can get Opalis to monitor it. It doesn't matter what you then use as a support desk tool, we can get Opalis to take the monitoring tool and connect it to the support desk tool. And then whatever you use to remediate, we'll take Opalis and we'll get it to query the support desk tool and go through the remediation process and whatever tool you use for that reason. Now, in this case, as you can see right down at the bottom, we're looking at a couple of technologies there, Service Manager and Operations Manager, two other pieces of the System Center suite working alongside of Opalis in order to provide a solution. Then we've got Virtual Machine Lifecycle Management. Okay. Automate the provisioning, resource allocation, and retirement of virtual machines. So another area that you can start to essentially automate. I've got an installation. I live down here on the Gold Coast. I've got an installation up in Brisbane where we provision web front ends, virtual web front ends for their SharePoint environment based on the number of users. Okay, so once the user load gets above a certain number, Opalis clicks in and automatically goes and provisions another VM, takes care of all the DNS and all the other pieces that it needs to provide the second front end. Extend your virtual machine management to the cloud. Obviously, guys, we're going into, there's a lot of movement into the cloud, and Opalis is a great tool to support that movement into the cloud and then all your cloud services beyond that. So here we're looking at a couple of other technologies, System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and obviously Hyper-V. That said, it doesn't stop at Hyper-V. Opalis has an integration kit for VMware as well. Then with your Service Manager or your CMDB automation, we can automate our CI updates in the CMDB. We can create new objects, relationships between the objects. This is all using System Center Configuration Manager. Now, what I'll do during the course of today is I'm using a couple of integration packs, some of them that the integration packs that come with the product, as in the System Center, and then I'm going to use the integration pack that has been developed by the guys and by the community and put up on CodePlex, which lets us essentially do things in Active Directory. We'll show you how to import some integration packs. We'll do that with the SharePoint integration pack. And just a few little things around the product like that. Okay. This is how we know Opalis, or this is how it's currently touted, okay, as part of the System Center suite of products. Now, what we see here is Data Protection Manager, Config Manager, Virtual Machine Manager, Service Manager, Operations Manager. And then underneath that, we have that disk that essentially supports all of them. Because what Opalis is supposed to do is be the glue that connects all these technologies together. So if you're going to raise alerts in Ops Manager, and as a result of that, you're going to need, say, Virtual Machine Manager to provision another machine as a result of something going down, then currently you would have to script that, come up with some convoluted and creative means of doing that, but Opalis becomes the glue that allows you to say, take an Ops Manager object, take a Virtual Machine Manager object, join them together and tell them what to do. So see it, guys, as the glue in the System Center suite to help that IT process automation. Then extend it. Like I said, what I want to do today is plant some seeds. Yes.
So do you have to run the other, any of the other System Center applications to be Opalis?
No. No, it can stand alone. If you don't have any of the other System Center suite and you still want to use Opalis, that's fine too. Okay. What I'll show you guys a little later is we'll look at some of the currently in-play integration packs for other technologies, be it IBM, HP, so on and so forth. Okay. It can stand alone. It's shipped as part of the System Center Enterprise licensing, and there's a couple other permutations on the licensing. So you get it as a result of being a System Center customer. So it's likely you have a System Center environment in place. And put it this way, if you want to purchase it, you pretty much have to purchase the System Center suite. So, that said, there's nothing to stop you going, no, I don't want any other System Center product in my environment, but I want to use the automation and orchestration that Opalis gives me. Okay, so this is what it looks like from a System Center integration and OIS point of view. We've basically got an environment that has a client, is dependent on a data store, and then sends requests and actions to servers extended around our enterprise. So the OIS client is essentially where we do our work. That's our palette, that's where we create our workflows, that's where we kick them off from, that's where we set them up from. Okay. The management server is there to do a few other things. Provision action servers, provision integration packs, and take care of licensing and a few other little things. And then there's also a web-based client operator console where we can get to that next step, which is to, once those workflows are provisioned, once those workflows are ready, we can essentially delegate the effort to somebody else. So we can say to somebody, here's a workflow that you need to monitor once a day or potentially run once a day. For instance, let's just look at it this way. Server goes down. Generally, the support desk gets a call. The first thing they do is probably try and ping it. Okay, so there are two ways that this is looked at. Firstly, we hope that the person on the support desk has enough of a technology mind to be able to ping. Right? Because, you know, the person who answers the phone generally is there to take requests, fill in a form, and pass it on to somebody else. But we'd like to get to the point where we can essentially put somebody in front of a computer and they say, and the first line is, we can't get to this information, and that person can actually determine straight away whether that particular server is up and down, up or down. So we give them a console, and the person on the phone says, I can't get my mail or exchange seems to be down, and all they need to do is click start workflow, put in the name of the machine, and it will give them a whole heap of details about that particular machine based on the fact that we've sent out a request to that machine. And then they can report on those details and move it to the next step rather than just move it to the next step without any information. Okay, and that's one of the smaller little things that our palace allows us to do. Okay, then we have a data store, which is a SQL database that stores all our workflows, all our policies, all our orchestrations, all our runbooks, etc., etc. From that store, we have action servers placed in different locations. So if you want a policy that runs regularly in Sydney, you would have an action server in Sydney and you would target that policy at Sydney. Maybe you want it to run in Cairns, you would target it at Cairns, so that it's not running in Brisbane for the sake of running. It's only running on the action server it's been told to run. Okay. So we essentially break up the environment so that policies, workflows, etc. are running in the right places at the right times because we can schedule them as well. Okay, let me just go backwards and I'll go to this machine and just give you guys an overview of the Opalis environment. Okay, now I just remembered as I bumped it against the front there. I can't really go through the whole day without explaining this, right? Why I have a blue cast on my arm. It's because they didn't have any pink. Right? Pink. It's from cage fighting. You guys should see the guy who lost. Right? If you check on eBay, there's a pair of rollerblades for sale. Any price you like. Yeah, for some other reason, 3 weeks ago, I decided that in my efforts to capture my misspent youth, I would go rollerblading. And I rollerblade regularly, and I used to play roller hockey, so it's not like I went rollerblading for the first time in my life. And that particular day was one of those kind of days when I wanted to just do some aerobic work. And I live locally down in Miami. I rollerbladed all the way to Southport, all the way back. It's about 22, 24 Ks. And I fell over 60 meters from my driveway and broke it so badly that when I held it this way, the wrist went like that. And when I held it that way, the wrist went like that. And so last week, they put a pin in it. And Wednesday, they took the stitches out. When they were taking them out, I fainted. How macho is that? The nurse was really nice as well, and I tried my best to stay upright. I was sweating and feeling queasy and all that kind of stuff, doing my absolute utmost to just stay upright. And then she said, "Are you okay?" And I went, "No." She said, "That's okay, you lie down, we'll carry on without you." So, yeah, anyway, if you need rollerblades, eBay. Okay, guys, so let's look at this environment. I don't have a very good resolution, so you're going to have to excuse me kind of moving the bar up and down. What we've got, and I will just kick off the management server. What we do is we install Opalis. Currently, the version that I'm using here is 6.3. The version that Opalis was at when Microsoft acquired it was 6.2. That one only works on Server 2003. Right. They moved it to 6.3, and they made it Server 2008 compatible. So that's the version I'm using here. There is a evaluation version out there if you guys want to get it and start to play with it. Obviously, there's a beta of Orchestrator as well if you want to get it and have a play with it. The install of this particular version is a little convoluted because it's still using binaries from 6.2, so you have to do this kind of weird run a patch type thing. That said, it's not the end of the world. It just means you know, the install is a bit of a box-ticking exercise, and you have to make sure that you do it the way it's supposed to be done. What it then does is installs this file called Opalis Software, which gives you the integration server, gives you a means of managing your database environment, your licensing. This is the client that you guys can see currently up on the screen. We get an operator console, and we get a deployment manager. What the deployment manager allows you to do is obviously decide where you want your action servers to be. Now, currently, if I went to my action servers, you'll see I have one. I've got everything on one machine. So on my NYC Opalis machine, I've got my database, it's also my action server, and it's my integration services client. Then you can decide in terms of clients where you want the client machine to be. So there's nothing stopping you from having multiple instances of the Opalis environment. Okay, so if you are an enterprise that is widespread and you feel that the orchestrations or the workflows that you devise for your local environment might not be viable in other environments, then you can give them an instance of the client and say to them, you do your thing, you know, or here's a workflow, run it in your environment, configured slightly differently. And then right back here, guys, we have the integration packs, which I'll come to in a little while as well. Okay. So what this then allows us to do is, if we want to, we can start to import integration packs, import configuration data, export. We can disconnect this particular instance and connect to another instance. So much like a regular environment, if you have your client environments in multiple places, multiple locations, multiple countries, there's nothing stopping you connecting to them and running workflows or setting off workflows or starting workflows remotely. All right. And then what you would generally do is ensure that that particular client is attached to certain action servers so that those particular policies only run in the correct places. Okay, what I have seen in a few Opalis installations is that they have everything being pushed out to every action server. So it's running in some places where it's unnecessary, and it's doing things in some cases that are unnecessary. So that's just a simple breakdown of the environment, all right? Runs on top of a SQL database, as we can see here, okay? It creates its own little Opalis database, which sets up a whole heap of tables, some views, and then obviously from that point of view as well, there is the ability to report directly out of the database. If you want to, using reporting services, although Opalis does drive a few simple reports through the web interface as well. I'll get that out of the way. And whoopsie. Come on. What am I doing wrong? There we go. Sorry, my bad. What am I doing wrong? That's better. Okay, guys. Now that we know how the setup works, or how we essentially install. So there's nothing there that's stopping you guys from having an Impalis environment, put it that way. Okay? It's fairly simple. You just need a server in place, 03 or 2008. You need a database. Then we can go about the business of starting to essentially create policies and workflows. Now, just like any other process within the company, generally a load of people sat around in a room, had lots of meetings, and came up with a way of doing things. It usually involves paper, arguments, and a few other, elements that, just drive you completely insane, really. And then that becomes the process, and the process is usually, okay, you're in charge of watching this, and when it gets to that, archive it, or when it gets to this, do this, and that kind of thing. Now, you guys have to go out and identify those particular processes or those particular solutions, okay. And then come up with a method of doing it. Ask questions, go through the architectures, go through the processes, essentially come up with a method, with a map that has some logic that you can then duplicate in the OIS client. Once you've done that, you can obviously start to do things like test and verify the logic. And from then on, you can start to build your workflows. Okay? We do that by creating a new policy. We add objects, which are the little icons that you'll see being dragged around and things like that. We fill out the necessary properties around those objects. We link them together, and then we start to do things like testing, checking the policy, starting the policy, and so on. So let's have a look at that guy then. So, as you guys can see, what I've got here is a whole heap of policies and a whole heap of objects. Okay. So what I go in and do is go new. I can create a folder structure, or within the folder that I'm currently clicking on, I can create a policy. In this case, I've decided to create a policy called Archive Logs. And then just by going in to what we call our monitoring integration pack, which is one of the foundation integration packs that ships with the product. So you don't have to go and install this one. It's there when you install Opalis. I can take a monitor folder, whichever one of these guys I want, and go and drag him onto my workspace. Once I've got him onto my workspace, I can set properties around him. Now, getting rid of this guy will break down this one. This guy's monitoring a folder. I'm now looking at the properties. All right. It's a monitor folder object, so kind of obvious what it does, and it's monitoring a folder that I have identified in that particular path, C logs. Right. I have the ability, obviously, to include subfolders. Then, if we're going to monitor something, surely there's a reason we need to monitor it. There needs to be some sort of trigger. Okay. So I'm essentially sending this trigger based on the number of files in that particular folder. Okay. So once the number of files goes above 5, I wanted this particular environment to be archived. I want all the files in that directory to be archived. Few other things. Obviously, when you're running policies at action servers in remote locations, you're going to need authentication for those remote locations. Now, you can run under the service account, which this guy is doing currently, but if you wanted to run under a different account in a different place, then this is where you would set it up. Okay, we can also set some run behavior, which determines, obviously, what do I want to do with these files? When I find 5 files, am I going to list them somewhere? Do I want to list them as 5 separate items? Do I want to list them as one big item, flattened, as a CSV? So we get a little bit of control over what we're doing. Then once I've monitored that folder and the number of files has gone above 5, I want some sort of action. And that action is to move those files. Now, as you can see here, the source is origin folder from monitor folder. So get me the folder that I'm monitoring from the original object, right? And get me everything in that folder, right? So once it's gone above 5, get me everything, and then move it into another directory called temp archive. So create and move, create a directory called temp archive and move those folders into. If the destination already exists, so if temp archive is already there, I can overwrite it. Otherwise, I can just kind of leave it there and append. Once that's done, I want some indication that we've moved files. So in this case, I'm just writing an information message to my event log. Okay, guys, just another little thing here. As you can see with the source object there, how do I get that origin folder from monitor folder? Well, I get that by subscribing to publish data. Because what an object does, I've asked it to monitor a directory and do something as a result of there being more than 5 items in that directory. So what does it do? It monitors the directory. When it hits above 5 items, it publishes some data to what we call the data bus. The data bus is that pipe that runs between all the objects. It publishes the data to the data bus, which is then consumed by the object that it's linked to. So this next object, I can go subscribe to my published data, and as you can see, the object is the monitor folder, and this is all the data that it's publishing. Okay. Now I'm taking the origin folder in this case. Forget that C from reports. That's just an inherent indication of how it is accessing. Okay, you can actually get quite granular with this and use UNC paths and all those kind of weird and wonderful things if you want to. You don't necessarily need to have it set up like this. And then as in destination, I'm doing the same thing. I'm subscribing to publish data. I'm taking the origin folder and I'm adding a temp archive folder to it. I can show common published data, which is object data from the actual local machine, rather than the data that the previous object is publishing. Okay. Now, what should happen is I can do a number of things here. I can check this guy in and start him, which means that I have an environment now that is now being monitored. Okay. I've got a monitor item that is just sitting there monitoring. Now, you might say, well, that's a silly thing to do, because why do we want to monitor a directory 24 hours a day that is possibly only going to be used for 9 to 5, 8 working hours in a day or something like that? So in that case, we can do things like set up schedules, right? So we can say that this file should only be monitored at certain times. Okay. But we'll look at that in a second as well. What I will do is test this guy. What it does is it opens up in a test console, which gives me a breakdown of this particular guy. It also gives me a breakdown of all the values of the objects. So I can go through it as a test and kind of look at what's going on here. But what I'll do is I'll just run it. Bad boy. There's no files in that particular. There's nothing in that particular file right now. So let's just go. So I'm going to local to C logs, and I'll create a text document called new text document, and then I will copy and paste it, I don't know, however many times. Okay, so I moved that guy out, I stopped him, and now I'll run him again. This time, hopefully, something will happen. So it's just sitting there monitoring. What happens with Opalis is when you click run, it doesn't run straight away. It kind of waits, I think it's 22 seconds, and then it runs. Because it's on this kind of weird cycle. There's a, you know, the idea of the timer running in services? It's on a similar cycle to that guy. And it waits its little while, and then hopefully we'll get on with the business of actually going, oh, there's a file there. I should check how many files there are, and if they're more than five, I should then move them. Okay. So as you can see, it's going through that process now. So it's doing that for every file. The second object is taking every file and moving it individually. The first one is identifying them, the second one is moving them. And now we should be able to go back to that directory and see that there are no files in there. There's now a directory called temp archive, and inside of temp archive we should see all the files that I created. Okay. I feel like a magician sometimes when I do that. It's kind of one of those weirdities where you kind of feel, wow, that was kind of magical. All right, in the second instance, this is more along the lines of the policy or the workflow that you would give to the service desk guy. Okay. So this one is a custom start, which basically means I'll decide when it starts. And as a result of that, I'm starting my workflow, and my workflow has to go out there and get the hostname and IP from a particular computer, and then check whether it is a healthy state or an unhealthy state. Right, so here what's important is not so much the objects, but the links between the objects. Because when I can now set properties on the links by going, if the percentage of packets received from get computer IP is greater than or equal to 50, so as long as I'm getting more than 50 packets, then that computer is healthy. If I'm getting fewer than 50 packets, which is the other link, then that computer is not as healthy as I want it to be. Okay. And as a result of that, the get computer will ping the computer you're asking it to. So now we've got an object that will take parameters. And as a result of that ping, it will determine whether that computer is healthy or unhealthy. So if I was to move this guy into the test environment and run him, the first thing that's going to do is ask me which computer I want to check the health of. So I've got a few computers running here. So I'll run NYC DC1. Okay, it quickly goes and checks it. And as you can see, show details custom start. Basically telling me that Opalis is pinging DC1. I'll hide that. In this particular guy, the object is get computer, so it's checking the response. And in the last one, I should get some details. 100% packets received from NYC DC1. Okay, so we're now getting that environment, which is that kind of, this is what I would give the support person. The console, he simply clicks start, enters the name of the computer, and he can check the health of the computer. And as you can see, he can get a fair bit of information shown to him based on the results if we want to set him up that way. Okay. So guys, I'll just move on with a couple of other slides, and then we'll start to look at things like integration packs. So everybody okay with the idea of how Opalis works, how we essentially create policies and how they move, how we can test them, and how we can see results for them? What we should also see, which I'll show you just now, is because in that initial policy workflow, I asked him to write to the event log. So we should say that there should be an event log error entry that says that X amount of text files were moved to a temp archive directory. Okay, so what we've done there is use some of the foundation objects in System Center Opalis. What we're going to start looking at now is what we call integration packs. Now, the foundation objects are integration packs, but those are the integration packs that are shipped with the product. What we want to extend to is other integration packs, because let's face it, I'm trying to plant some seeds here, but you guys aren't too concerned about monitoring folders, right? You guys are concerned about monitoring large enterprise environments. So we've got some vendor-specific integration. As you guys can see on the slide, besides the initial objects, system, scheduling, monitoring, file management, email, notification, utilities, which are the foundation type stuff, you guys can see there's a System Center Config Manager, Operations Manager, Service Manager, Data Protection Manager, Virtual Machine Manager, and so on. Right. So we're starting to see what we call the integration packs for the System Center suite. When we then go to those integration packs, we start to see various objects that we can drag onto our palette that allow us to monitor and control those particular environments. Okay? Auto detection of data schemas, forms, and fields. So the integration packs are created for a particular product, regardless of Opalis. The innards of the integration pack, the assemblies, the classes within that integration pack, don't care about Opalis. They're all about working with the specific software that that integration pack has been created for. Okay? Integration packs, which are included in the download, are supported and updated by Microsoft. When you download the product, you get a whole heap of integration packs. These are the supported integration packs. Like I said, there's a community out there that is creating multiple integration packs. Generally, they pop up on CodePlex. Microsoft grabs them, goes through some sort of robust testing, I would hope, and then goes, yeah, this is good, we'll support this, and we'll ship it with the next product. But that said, there's nothing to stop you going to CodePlex and say, I want to control Active Directory from Opalis, so I'm going to grab the AD integration pack and import it and use it. Okay. So the integration packs, in most cases, come with some sort of pre-built workflows. Within Config Manager, we know that there's a particular set of things that we like to do in Config Manager. So it says, okay, what are common tasks within Config Manager? We'll give you the workflow for that. So you don't have to sort of start from scratch. It's built with ITIL or Microsoft Operations Framework in mind. Now, Microsoft Operations Framework is built on ITIL. So the idea is that if we looked at ITIL, it's built with that particular methodology in mind. Okay? And as a result, we get a rapid time to value. Okay. So these are some of the other integration packs that are currently available. Right. BladeLogic, BMC, CA, EMC, HP, IBM, VMware, Symantec. Okay. So these are already integration packs that are supported, that are available for controlling environments that already exist out there. And then obviously, as we're seeing, this slide would be 3, 6 months old potentially. So when it says plus many more, you probably find that that list has doubled in the past 6 months. There isn't such, what I'm starting to see is, as you indicated by putting your hands up, there's not too much Opalis in Australia. The community in the US is ridiculous, and in Europe they seem to have run with it. And there are lots of people working with them, there are lots of integration packs popping up, and people are climbing in and saying, okay, we want Opalis, but does it work with XYZ? Well, not out of the box. So what do? We create an IP for XYZ so that we can use Opalis. All right? So we're starting to see not only integration packs, extensions to integration packs. Right? A company might have a particular need that goes beyond the integration pack that's available, and all of a sudden you'll see somebody publish an extension to that. Okay. This includes things, as I mentioned, like SharePoint and Active Directory. So there is an integration pack for SharePoint, and there's an integration pack for Active Directory. So just to go back to this machine, and then we'll look at a few things around integration packs. Okay, guys. So what I've got down here is one of the regular everyday integration packs that ship with the product. This is the Config Manager integration pack. Okay. Now, if I moved this guy slightly to the side, whoopsie, come here. You can see that it currently has advertise task sequence, refresh collection, add computer to collection, create advertisement, create collection, delete collection, deploy software update, so on and so forth. Okay. So it's basically taking certain objects and tasks from the system center config manager environment and saying here are objects that allow you to do that. This pack has been extended even further. And what you will start to see is that it's extended further still with Orchestrator coming out. And then, and by the time we get to Orchestrator, it's likely that this pack won't only have 15 or 12 objects, it'll have 25 or 40. Okay. So that's the way the community is working to extend these packs and give you more functionality in the Opalis world. Now, what I have here is custom start, and then I've grabbed the create collection object, and I'm going to ask it to create a collection and then send an event log message. I won't necessarily need the event log message because I should just be able to go to my config manager environment, which is this guy here. There's my config manager environment. These are all my collections. And what I might do then is go back to, go back to Opalis. Excuse me having to bounce up and down like this. If you are hungover, then that's probably not a good thing. So what this guy does, custom start, as you can see, there's nothing here because the custom start object basically just wants to be told when to start. And then I'm creating a collection on a computer named OMCM. The parent collection would be the root collection in this case because it's not going to be a sub-collection or anything like that. The collection name I want to create is called testing. And if I want to add a comment to the description of that collection, I'm going to put just testing. And then I wanted to just give me a little message saying that the collection and then go get subscribed to the published data, right, which comes from the create collection object, and it publishes to the data bus the collection ID, collection name, the comment, the connection, and the parent collection. Okay, so with these particular links that have no intelligence, as you can see, this is just custom start return success. So think about that, guys. Like I said, this is about planting seeds. Custom start could return failure, or create collection could return failure. So we can get quite complex. Then I'll take this guy out of this environment and just test him. He may take a few seconds. Oh, maybe not. Well, he's trying. Okay, so basically the custom start always kicks off straight away. And now the second little piece here is hanging a little bit because he has to go find OMCM, he has to go find the root collection, he then has to create a collection, register it with the server, etc., and then bring that information back and create an event log message. Okay, so you'll probably spend a little bit of time kind of going round and round and round, and then you'll come back and say, oops, there we go. I've created this collection. Now I should be able to go back to the OMCM machine, go to my config manager and refresh. And you can see right down the bottom here, I've got a collection now called testing. Okay. So like I said, guys, this is about planting seeds. This is about giving you guys the ability to look at this technology and go, okay, well, how can I start to use this? There are, you can obviously get very, very complex. You can have workflows that go in multiple directions. These links, you can have as many links as you like. I think it's up to 128, but why would you need that? You know, so what happens if it doesn't happen? What happens if it sort of happens? What happens if we have the collection created, but we get a some sort of failure message anyway, and so on. And you can create all the different permutations and then link them off in different directions. And as a result, if the collection isn't created, raise something in Ops Manager. And as a result of that, send it to the service desk, and as a result of that, create a log file somewhere, and so you can go completely nuts and start to become really complex with your environments or with your workflows. Okay, I'll move this guy out the way and go back to my Palace environment, and then we'll just look at the idea of what happens with our integration packs. Now, I do have in my downloads, or is it in documents, have an integration pack there for SharePoint. Okay, this is the one that I downloaded off CodePlex. And as you can see, it's just an OIP file. And what that basically means is an Opalis integration pack. Now, I've got the AD integration pack already in my Opalis environment, but what I want to do is bring the SharePoint environment in. So what I do is register an integration pack with the management server. Okay, so I want to add the integration pack. In this case, it's in my documents, wherever that might be. Oh, this is a server, right? So, sorry? Oh, that's right. And there's my SharePoint integration pack, which I just open. Next, finish. Okay. So now I've got my SharePoint integration pack in place. And now I can deploy this integration pack to an action server. Right. So in terms of this, if you're going to use an integration pack only in one place in the world, then just deploy it to that action server. It doesn't need to sit everywhere. You just deploy it to where you need it. Okay. In this case, I'm going to deploy it to the machine that I'm currently using. So this is the SharePoint integration pack, and I'm going to put it on NYC Opalis, which is this machine. Add that. Now, obviously, if we were deploying it to multiple action services, we could list them all and then highlight them and deploy. We can schedule the installation. So if we don't want to send stuff across the wire during a workday, we can schedule it for overnight. And then that'll finish. Yeah. Yep. That's all it is. Integration packs are really tiny, guys. What you're basically seeing is most integration packs are just made up of DLLs, okay, classes. So what we're doing is we're essentially creating a class that does something, a couple of methods in it, fetch this, do that, and we're giving it an icon. I would guess that the icon is probably the heaviest part of the IP, you know, so... Okay. Now, the caveat currently is, in order to see this integration pack, I actually have to close this guy down and then reopening. Okay, he'll do a little bit of a refresh and go fetch the integration pack. And now I have a Microsoft SharePoint integration pack as well. Right, and as you can see, I can create list items, delete attachments, delete documents, delete list items, download attachments, etc., etc. Okay. What I wanted to show you guys is, if I can find him, am I going nuts? There he is, Active Directory. Okay, so I'll go back through my policies and just bounce all these guys. Okay, this is another one based on a custom start. And here I'm going to go get users in a particular group in AD. Okay, just one of the various options in Active Directory. Now, as you can see here, we've got a number of objects within the AD integration pack. Add users to group, create AD user, create computer account, create security group, so on and so forth. Get object, LDAP path, primary domain controller, so on and so forth. So this guy, once again, guys, is just a custom start. And then all it's going to do is go to New York City DC1, which is my domain controller, and... as you can see, it uses the group LDAP path to go off and find me a user within the test group inside of the production OU, or find me the users. All right. If there is a caveat with the AD integration package, the fact that it needs the full LDAP path. Now, this guy, once again, should allow me to, basically, I've got my DC up here, I've got AD, and within my production, I've got this group called test, and it has two members. So if I went back to Opalis and ran this guy, we'll run him in test once again. Okay, as you can see, fairly quick. Custom start, get users in group, send event log message. It sends two event log messages because it found two users. Okay, so I should then be able to go to my event log. And somewhere in here, I've got a couple of Opalis tasks. This first one, I've been getting this weird sort of, it's like the event ID object is not reporting. Since I moved these files to externally from my machine. But what it does do is it gives me the information I want at the bottom. Right. So group members, it's found Susanna Stubberod, and then the other one would have found Tengiz. Okay, so just another way of going about it, guys. All right. I'm not going to say simple, but easy enough. Move this guy out of the way, and I'll move this guy out of the way. So, given where we are then with the integration packs and what they allow us to do, what happens if the integration packs that are available don't allow us to do what we need to do? Okay, what happens next in terms of I want to do something that there's no integration pack for? And I think this is the real win with Opalis, in that you now have, you have a product that ships with an SDK that essentially says to you, if you have a script for it, if you have a DLL for it, a class, a library, a program, anything, then tell me where it is. I'll wrap it into a little bubble for you. I will turn it into an integration pack, and you can import it, and you can put as many objects into it as you please. Okay. So what if we needed to do a different thing, as in our integration packs don't give us what we need? Right. We've got something called the Quick Integration Kit. Okay. It's a command line interface wizard. And what it does is it takes deployable objects and packages them into integration packs for you. Okay? So you can encapsulate command arguments, parameters, based on the various configuration. And as a result of that, you get a .NET Framework 2.0 DLL. Okay. Then there's a couple of, there's a integration kit IP that you can use to test your DLLs before you package them. So you want to make sure they work. Once you know that they work, package them and ship them as integration packs. In most cases, what I've started to see is people are creating integration packs for their environments. Right? There is a community out there that a lot of people are creating integration packs for whatever, but I've got a couple of clients that are just saying, we need an integration pack that does this. We're not interested in putting it up on the net. We're not interested in this. We're concerned with our environment, and we're going to create a pack that lets Opalis automate processes in our environment. And that's all we're concerned about. Okay. As you can see, we've got a number of modes, run command, PowerShell, run program, run SSH command. All right. Okay. So our quick wizard, quick objects, will deliver complementary functionality for extending the OIS. The wizard will allow you to create a group of objects that each perform a different operation, but are related in some way. Okay, we group the objects in the palette and then provide unique icons. So we can almost create these things from scratch using the palette if we use the wizard. All right. Then you can deploy these to action servers or to clients and use in production. All right. And we can test them by using the invoke or monitor.net objects. Right, where we want to test their interaction. Okay, just to go backwards and show you some of that functionality, guys. As you can see up on the screen, I've taken out of the SDK and I've executed the quick executable, and it puts two icons up on your desktop, the wizard and the CLI. Now the first thing you want to do is basically, what I've got here is a simple little script, which I'll copy. And then I'll just run it. And the reason I'm doing this is to ensure that it works. Right. So now that I know that it works, okay, it's changed the password of the Opalis Remoting Services service. Okay. And as a result of that, it's told me that this particular command was successful. Because if I'm going to now take this particular command and push it into an integration pack, I mean, it's a very simplified example, but I need to know that the command actually works before I start moving around in the parameters and various other pieces. So the only piece that I'm really interested in is initially is the /\. Okay, because all these other pieces, localhost, password, et cetera, are going to be values that need to be parameters that this particular object will take. Because we don't only want to change the password on one machine always. We want potentially to go put in the machine name and hit go, and it goes and changes the password in a machine in another part of the world, for that matter. All right. So I use this example because the reset password, anyone who's ever worked on a support desk, reset password, outside of it's not printing, is probably the most requested support call. Okay, so we know that this guy works, and as a result of that, we want to run through the quick CLI and create this guy as an object that we can use. Okay. Now, what you need to do is give it a name. I'm going to call it Kester. My typing's coming right, considering what's going on here. With the name of the file, I'm just going to call him Tester. Okay, so what we're doing here is essentially we're going to use that command or piece of that command. We're going to set some parameters, and the quick CLI environment is going to create it as a DLL for us. Okay, so if it has multiple, if it's a class with multiple methods and that kind of thing, we just need to make sure that we have a script that works and works properly, etc., etc. Okay, once I go save, go okay, we won't worry about the license key for the moment. And the reason the license key is there is so that you can protect your integration packs. Okay? Because one of the things about this particular methodology that we're seeing now is once the DLL exists, I can open it up later. But I obviously can't do that if I start using license keys and things like that. Just like the integration packs, you can open them up later if you want to and go, I don't like the way it does this, I'd like to tweak it. Okay, so I go next. Obviously, we can set some information around this assembly, so we can look after things like versioning and trademarks and copyright and companies and a lot of stuff. Then we've got the environment around commands. Now, I'm going to cancel out of this guy, guys, because we've only got about 10 minutes to go. And I want to, what I'll do is use this guy. And let me just close this one. Close that and close that. Because you can't, that's another little caveat there. You can't load a DLL if it's being used in the testing environment. It will give me an error saying that it's currently an instance of it is running somewhere else. So I'm going to load an existing assembly. So for instance, think about it in terms of I've gone through the process of creating the assembly. I've tested it. There's a few things I don't like about it. Now I can go back to that DLL, open it up. So I'll grab this guy, open him up. Okay, go next. There he is, reset service password, and now I'm going to edit him. All right, he's called reset service password. I might want to do a few little things like put spaces in the name and then look at some of the arguments. So, like I said, the only bit that I'm concerned with in terms of that particular command was the sc backslash backslash. All the other bits are going to be parameters. So what I then start to do is I start to create arguments. And I do that by going add, giving the argument a name, deciding on the type of argument it is, and deciding on the display style. So I've got text, encrypted text, obviously for the password. Okay, true, false, text with selection, date, time, file, folder, computer, so on and so forth. So I'll cancel out of that guy. What I'll do instead is edit this guy so we can see. Server name is a command argument, and the display style is a computer. So we're saying I need a server name, and I need it to be the name of a computer. Okay. So if I was to change this guy just a little bit, I'll put a space in server name, go OK. Then I'm using server name up here, so what I'll do is I'll take it out. And now, based on the parameters that I've created, I'd like to insert the parameter in there. And when I insert the parameters, it gives me all those parameters that I've created. Obviously, I've changed server name, or I've changed the format of server name, so I'd like to put him back in. Okay. Then I've typed in the word config, and then I've inserted service name. Then I've typed password equals and inserted the password argument. Okay, once I'm happy with that, I can go next. It builds my assembly for me. All right, the wizard completed successfully. The interesting bit here, guys, is that little box in the middle, which basically says, would you like to build this as an integration pack now? I will. Okay. A couple other things we can do. We can initialize from an already existing integration pack. So we can tack this on if we want to. I won't, obviously, in this case. Product name. Test is always good. Category name is, I'll just call it control. Manufacturer is me. End user license agreement, all that kind of stuff I won't worry too much about. Now I can start to customize the appearance. Okay, so as you can see, I get all the icons here. In terms of this customized appearance, guys, that particular directory with those icons is just in the install environment. So if you want to go put your own icons in there or company-specific and things like that, you can do that. But I'll just grab, I don't know, this guy. Okay. Then I can go next. And here I can essentially details of each integration pack object. Okay. So I can basically go class, whatever, name, whatever, and then customize the appearance. Okay, so for instance, I was looking for a particular library. Let's go to module 9. Let's take that guy, open him up. The class will show itself. Okay, so it's basically saying to me, all right, well, quick demo reset service password. That's also the name, as you can see now with the spaces. I can put in a description. Since this is an object inside my integration pack, I have the opportunity to choose another icon. And then I can go OK. Now, if I had multiple objects, I would just go add until I had all my objects in my integration pack. And then go next. All right. Add files that you would like to have deployed with your IP. So if you have any other scripts, assemblies, jar files, blah, 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 that you want to push out with this guy, you can do that now. otherwise just go next. Okay, specify the integration pack file to be created. So in other words, give me a name for it and tell me where you want it. So I'm putting it inside module, I'll just put it in lab files. This was tester. And go save, and go next. And it builds it for me. Okay, finished with that guy. I can now open up my Palace environment, or I can go to my, firstly, go and show you guys the integration pack, which is sitting in lab files. So as you can see, tester OIP is sitting there, and all I have to do is go to my management environment, import this guy, and send it to my Opalis environment. Now, this demo OIP is one that I obviously created earlier, so let me just quickly open Opalis. Okay, that's one that I created earlier. I called it Stuff, and inside of Stuff, I put that very same DLL that we created. Now, reset service password. Obviously, as you can see, he takes three parameters. So tell me service name. Oh, those parameters are in the wrong order. Opalis remoting is the service I want the password to be changed at. The server name. I usually just type it in there because this is a little clunky because now you should have to go and explore your whole network. So I'll go nyc-opalis. And then the password is obviously what I'd like to change it to. I left it unencrypted, as you would do in most cases for testing purposes. And then once you know that it works, you would encrypt the password. Finish. And obviously I can take this guy and run him. And the bit I want is right down at the bottom. Oops, I'm getting an error. What I really wanted to see, and I'll quickly show you. Work. Oh, there he is. Is the invoke.net. So I'll just get rid of this guy quickly. Yeah, get rid of him. Okay, so invoke.net, for instance, in a test environment, would let me go off and get the assembly that I want. Okay, and then that would obviously be the class that I'm using. And I don't want any setup information. In terms of properties, as you can see, this is where I would set what I'd like to. And then we can tab out of that one. Service name is a Palace remoting service, and the password I want to change is that guy. Okay, finish, and hopefully if I test this guy, get him to run. That's what I wanted to see. Okay, same thing I saw when I ran it, obviously through the command line. Okay, so it's as easy as that, guys. I know these have been very simple examples, but what I really wanted to do is just plant those little bit of seeds. I want you guys to think about these things and say, how can I take this to my environment and how can I expand it to work for me? Okay. We've got an opportunity here, guys, if you want to ask me any questions. If it's anything long and convoluted, then we can take it offline or go off-site. In terms of Opalis in general, I know that locally in Brisbane, well, for that matter, in Australia, there are not too many people currently in this space. There's a couple of guys I know of within Australia that do this, or do Opalis. So if anybody wants more information or wants to kind of go run with Opalis and wants my information so that I can get them things like virtual environments and scripts and all the other pieces, and there's a couple of good books currently being published on our palace, and I'm part of the beta program and the technology adoption program and things like that. So I'm not getting any more information than you guys are getting, because if you're on Twitter or something, you're probably getting better information than me. But there is the opportunity to start running with Opalis. Someone said to me many years ago, you should look at that SharePoint thing. And it's this is about 2006. Because I kind of think this product, like SharePoint, will come out of nowhere. Right? You've got to go backwards. You've got to see things as they are, right? SharePoint didn't exist until 2005, 2006. It was there, but nobody used it. And then suddenly it became the most widely used product ever in the history of this universe, out of nowhere. So it became so popular that you just ship a new version of SharePoint as quickly as humanly possible. And that's what I am starting to see, little rumblings around Opalis. I think potentially moving into Orchestrator, it's best in class from an automation point of view. And I would guess next version, when it is a fully mature .NET based product, I think it will be unbelievable. And for you guys, starting to get into Opalis and starting to become familiar with Opalis and becoming Opalis experts, gurus, or admins, or whatever you end up calling yourself, is probably a good step, because it's one of those sort of niche markets at the moment, and I see it going off in the near future. Anyway, guys, yes?
So, with the data side of it, can you manipulate the strings to create something like produce new strings?
Yes. Okay. Are you talking about the data bus or what it exposes? Yep, you have complete control over what is published to the database and what is consumed from the database. Okay? Like I said, if I wanted to go into long... Guys, the guys that are leaving and stuff like that, please don't forget to do an eval. I think it's done online, because I didn't see any blue paper being handed out today. That sounded like loo paper. You have complete control over published data and consumed data. Now, There's a few things, and I'll just because we've got a couple of seconds, so if we were to look at some of these policies that I have in place, I've got policies here that do a number of things. Okay, here's a sort of example of one that monitors files and does various other things. Okay, it monitors files, it moves files, it logs success, it checks it against schedules, it compresses files, it logs compression success, or it deletes files if they don't meet certain criteria. Now, obviously, in an environment like this, lots of information is being passed to the database. But in terms of that, we might not, for instance, in private scenarios, you might not want to be in that environment where heaps of data is passed. Like, maybe you don't want file names. That's when you can essentially just publish, say, for instance, the suffixes of the files you want deleted, or the suffixes of the files that you want compressed, and so on and so forth. You've got complete control over what's published, the database, and who accesses it. Okay, we can establish those things in the run behavior, and we can establish those things in the published data options. Okay, so we can, as you can see, take from a security point of view, and then we can start to kind of go into the properties, all right, of how the policy data is handled. So maybe we want no data passed on except what we decide to add.
I'm thinking building a string for a command that's got to be executed.
Yep.
So you've got the server switch name, whatever, and you pass it, but you've got to then put variables together to create the command.
Absolutely. If necessary, yeah. You would probably, if the string is going to be reused multiple times, then you probably just create it as a DLL. But if you want to run a string, there are script tasks, and you can tell the script task what to publish to the database and what is then consumed by the next object.
Is there a way to push data into a simple database?
Yep, there is push data and read data objects. So, yep.
Is the back end of this is still Java?
A lot of it, yeah, a lot of it. But like I said, it's got a lot of .NET skins, so you almost don't know it's Java anymore. That said, I think that there's certain functionality within the current product that takes a little longer than it should because it's of the interpretation and stuff like that's happening.
And how does it scale?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, we can consume web services. We can push to web services. Yeah. Yeah, there's pretty much, if it isn't already there, and you have an assembly, a script, a command that already does it, you can turn that into an object, as you can see, in about 2 minutes. So, okay, guys, thank you very much. I should...